Hello and welcome to The Heart of It, the podcast that gets to the heart of what we do and why we do it. I'm your host, writer and author Kate Sevilla, and each week I'll be taking a closer look at the working lives of passionate and creative people. This week, our guest is the wonderful Lex Gillies. You might know her on social media as Talented Lex. Lex is a rosacea and skin positivity campaigner, a British Skin Foundation ambassador, and the founder of The Real Skin Club, the new business she launched while in lockdown in 2020. In our chat, we talk about self-expression through makeup, the impact having rosacea has had on her life from both a personal and professional perspective, and the intersection of social media, mental health, and being of service to others. Plus, of course, we talk about what's ultimately at the heart of her work. Welcome, Lex Gillies. Thank you so much for joining us on the Heart of It podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Before you were a skin positivity campaigner and an ambassador for the British Skin Foundation, you were more focused on beauty and specifically around nail art. And you started your blog, Talented Lex, after you were made redundant in 2011. What was your job and your life like before you started blogging?
So I was living up in Leeds. I was a quantitative researcher for a bank.
Oh, my God. I did not see that coming.
Yeah. I hadn't really planned to do that as a job. I don't know if there's anyone that plans to do that as a job. But I was really loving living in Leeds. I worked with a really great team, had a really good kind of social life and everything. My job was okay, but I really wasn't, you know, in love with it or anything, but it was easy.
I got made redundant. You found quantitative research at a bank. You just found it really easy. It doesn't sound easy.
Well, it was kind of logical. You know, you could follow the same steps every day and you got the same results and all that kind of stuff. So it wasn't uncomfortable, I should say. And then I got made redundant and I had absolutely no idea what to do. I looked on lots of job websites, and in the entirety of Yorkshire, there were only two roles that were available to me that I could potentially go for. And I just thought, oh God, what am I doing? And my uncles lived in London and had forever been saying to me every Christmas, you should move to London, you should move to London, you'd love it. And, you know, you can stay with us if you really want to, if you need to help getting set up. And so when I got made redundant, it was about a week before my rent period was up on my flat.
So serendipitous.
I was just like, oh, it's a sign. I should leave.
Yeah.
And yeah, moved down to London, started job hunting. I was already kind of Twitter obsessed.
Okay.
I was on it all the time.
Yes.
And I had always been a fan of like painting my nails, and I just started putting pictures of that on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then people would say, how did you do that? And then I would tell them in like a threaded kind of Twitter conversation.
Back in the day,
and they would say,
would
this not... I know, God, it took forever. And then they said, you know, would this not be a better idea to put this on a blog? Would that not be quicker and easier for everyone involved? And I didn't really know what they were talking about. I had no idea what a blog was or how you would do one. So I set up a Tumblr.
Yeah.
You know, as you do. And I just started putting my nails on there, and very quickly, you know, that was the thing. During the day, I would be applying for jobs, going for interviews, that kind of thing. And then in the evening, I would be sat on Twitter, sat on my blog, and just, you know, I'd put up a different nail polish review or nail art look every day. And it just became the thing that I did to kind of stay sane.
Yeah.
Obviously, I didn't have a lot of money. I was staying with my uncles. It was just, you know, I'd sit in my room quite a lot and just while away the hours on the internet.
Yes.
And then over time, I just thought, right, well, I'm not only interested in nails, I do like makeup as well. And so I started putting little bits of that on the internet as well. And then over time, I started worrying, because by that point, you know, I had rosacea, I didn't know a lot about it, I was kind of muddling my way along. And I never really wanted to talk about it on my blog. I never really thought anyone else would be interested, or didn't see myself as knowledgeable enough to share anything of any real use.
Sure.
But I worried that people would look at some of my makeup photos and think, her skin looks weird in that photo, or why do we never see her naked face? And I wanted to kind of get ahead of that conversation. And so I just did a blog post saying, I have rosacea, here's what it is, that's the end of that. And honestly, never expected to ever have to speak about it ever again. I just thought, you know, I've got it out of the way.
I came out.
That conversation is
y'all
done.
Know.
Yeah. Let's never speak of it again. And then it slowly became obvious that people were more interested in the rosacea content than they were in anything else. I'd do a nail post and people would be asking questions about rosacea in the comments. It's just like, oh, okay, I see where this is going.
Did that kind of piss you off? Or you're like, no, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about nails.
It did a little bit at first because, you know, I like to think that I am a fully rounded human being with, lots of different interests. And I would hope that people would want to hear my thoughts on lots of things. But yes. I did kind of realize as well that there wasn't really anybody else doing the content that I was doing on social media. So, you know, even now, you know, I've been doing my blog for such a long time, but even now there are not that many rosacea specific bloggers out there.
I can only think of like you and Rose Gallagher.
Yeah, and I find it absolutely bonkers because it's thought there are about 450 million people in the world with rosacea.
Oh my goodness.
Which is just phenomenal that it's not better known and that there aren't more people talking about it. So I think, you know, I've had occasions over the past couple of years where I've been burning out or I've kind of felt like, you know, I don't want to just be the rosacea person. This is not what I wanted to do. And then I kind of look around and think, right, well, if I stopped posting about rosacea, who am I leaving to talk about it?
Yes.
And how, you know, where are people going to go for information? How reliable is that information going to be? There are a lot of people out there that are just trying to make a quick buck off people's vulnerabilities.
Yes.
And, you know, I do feel an enormous amount of responsibility to be the person that's sharing my reviews and things that I personally like, but I always make sure that I say to people, you know, I am not an oracle. I am not like the be all end all of rosacea. What works for me might not work for you, all that kind of stuff. So I do feel a responsibility to provide a service to people. And that is kind of what I see myself as doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What was it about makeup? You wrote, again, I really went over your website, but you wrote in it, you said, the first makeup item I ever bought was a black eyeliner pencil. I applied it poorly to my waterline with no other makeup. And I really identified with that because I remember the first makeup I bought was a little pot of dark blue, kind of purpley eyeshadow. And I remember like applying it like as best I could to like trying to get like in my waterline, which doesn't work when it's powder. And I remember I walked out the bathroom and my mom was like, you need to go take that off. not cute. So I strongly identified with that. And it just kind of got me thinking, like, what do you think kind of draws you to makeup? What specifically is it for you that, especially like with the nails and everything, that you feel like drew that to you?
So I wasn't interested in makeup for a really, really long time. We weren't allowed to wear it at the school I went to. And, you know, back then when I was at school, I had really great skin. You know, my rosacea hadn't fully started yet. And I didn't really see the need. It was only, I was drawn to eyeliner because I was a bit of a wannabe kind of goth emo girl.
Yes, I know, me
and,
too.
And, you know, I looked at people like Courtney Love and things like that. And I just thought, yeah, eyeliner, that's the gateway into being cool. So that's what I kind of went for on the occasional nights out. But yeah, like I said, I didn't put any mascara with it. I was very fair. You couldn't really see my eyebrows. So it was a lot of pale face and then just lots and lots of black eyeliner.
Waterline.
Which, in hindsight, yep. In hindsight was not a great look. And then I think over time, when I went away to university, that's where my rosacea kind of started properly. And for me then, makeup was very much just a necessity. It was an armor. It was a thing that enabled me to leave the house in the morning and not feel like people were staring at me.
Okay.
It meant that I could go to a lecture and not feel, you know, enormously embarrassed, and I could just be a normal person. So over time, that just kind of became the thing that I felt I had to do before I could leave the house, which is really sad in hindsight. And then, you know, over time, I started seeing it as, you know, I'd do the base, which would get my face back to where I thought it should be.
Sure.
Looking all kind of one color. And then I was just so drawn to bright lipstick and just like fun colors. And I like to say that I'm a creative person that can't draw at all. I'm terrible at drawing. I wish I wasn't, but I am. And I see that kind of as my creative outlet. I do love the way that makeup can kind of completely change the way you look. It can change the way you feel. And I do like the way that I can kind of control, after so many years of walking around and feeling out of control and feeling like people were staring at me for something I couldn't change, in a way it's quite nice to make people stare at me for something I can change. So if I want to go out wearing grey lipstick and people stare at me on the tube, that's absolutely fine because that's my choice and that's what I've decided to do. And I think that that has really helped me to take back control of my appearance and the way that I feel about myself.
Oh, I love that. So in addition to being a blogger and a skin positivity campaigner, you are also an award-winning Pinterest expert. I believe last year you won two awards, one including Pinner of the Year. And I would love to hear more about your relationship with Pinterest because it sounds passionate. It sounds long term. I would love to know more about it and what you love about it.
So I think like a lot of people, I first started using Pinterest when I was planning a wedding. It just became a thing that was, you know, I could invite my mum to different boards for like flowers or dresses or hair or makeup or whatever, an easy way to keep everything in one place. And I used to spend hours and hours and hours and hours just like plowing through everything. And I was, when I was younger, I was always really into collages. I would cut out magazines, I would collect things. Like that was really big for me.
Same.
I loved it. So I kind of see Pinterest as a bigger, kind of easier version as that, of that. Yes. You can just have all these different boards where you collect things from all over the internet. And so when we'd got married and then I was sat there on the evenings and I couldn't remember what I used to do with all my time before I was planning a wedding. I was just thinking, sitting there thinking, what do I have hobbies? What do I do now? So I went back on Pinterest. I thought, right, okay, I'm not planning a wedding, but I could plan the house that I definitely probably can't afford to buy for another 20 years. Let's start planning that. And just, you know, all these different things that I wanted to investigate and look into. And then obviously, you know, I was still blogging as well. Yeah. And then I noticed over time that, you know, I would occasionally throw some of my nail art pictures on Pinterest as well, just to see how they would do. And without me putting that much effort in, they were doing really well. And over time, I noticed that Pinterest was driving more traffic to my blog than a lot of the other kind of traditional social media sites. And that was without me even really trying. It was just me putting things up and leaving them to it. So I thought, right, okay, if I actually start trying, could this be like the thing that could change my blog? And by this point, I was working in social media. So I was working for an agency. I was doing the social media for a worldwide beauty brand that cannot be named. So I was doing their Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, everything. And so I was already really immersed in kind of beauty and the internet and social media.
Yes.
And then on the evenings, I was kind of like, right, how can I make Pinterest work for me? So I just started doing some research, looked into different groups, like found some forums, read into the different ways in which Pinterest worked. And I found it so fascinating that I think a lot of people see Pinterest and they lump it together with kind of Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Yes. Which is kind of incorrect.
Yeah. Pinterest is very, very, very clear that they are not a social media website. They are a visual search engine. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is that it's like Google, but you're filled with beautiful images rather than just like links to websites.
Yes.
So it's all about, you know, SEO and keywording, which as a blogger, you kind of, that becomes your bread and butter. You have you can have the smallest blog in the world that nobody reads apart from your mum. But if your keywording is on point and you are writing about something that a lot of people are Googling, they will find your blog. And that's kind of how Pinterest works as well.
Yeah.
So I just found it so fascinating that, you know, it's huge in America. Pinterest is absolutely massive. And in this country, people just aren't really there yet. They're slowly, slowly coming around. Brands are just kind of getting there. But I found it crazy that more bloggers weren't using it. I saw bloggers pouring hours and hours and hours into Instagram. And then, you know, you post something on Instagram, within 24 hours, it's gone. It's dead. Yeah. No one ever is going to interact with that ever again.
No.
And it's the same on, you know, Twitter moves so quickly that you put a tweet out there. And if people, yeah, exactly. So, and you can't search for anything. Like no one goes on Instagram and searches. It's if you don't see it in your feed, it's gone.
Yes.
So I kept mentioning to friends who are bloggers and have had businesses and things. I was like, you should definitely get on Pinterest. And they just got so bored of hearing me talking about it. And eventually one of my friends was starting a jewelry business, and she just said, if I hand over my account to you, can you just do it? Because I don't have the time or the inclination to do it myself. And I was like, yeah, that's exciting. I can build a Pinterest. Yes. I was like, thank you. So I was like, I can build this from the ground up. It's going to be so exciting. I can try all these new things and see what works. So I started doing her account for her. And then one of my blogger friends said, okay, can I just hand over mine to you as well? I took over her account. And then over time, I just, you know, word of mouth, another blogger would get in touch saying, oh, I saw how well you were doing her account. Can you do my account? So at one point I was managing, I think, 10 small businesses.
And were you still doing
bloggers?
Were you still doing your day job working for a beauty brand?
No, by this point, I'd quit my day job because I was very, very, very unhappy.
Yeah.
and I had basically no work-life balance whatsoever. I was miserable, and working in social media as well as doing social media in my spare time was incredibly stressful. Like, working in social media is incredibly stressful anyway.
Yes, it is.
Because you can't switch off, because the moment you leave work, the internet doesn't just stop and wait politely for you to clock in again at 9 a.m. before they send a complaint or, you know, for a disaster to happen. So I found myself constantly worrying about work. And because my client was a beauty brand and I'm interested in beauty, it's not like I could just not follow anybody, you know, in that world. My social media was so merged between personal and private that I found it impossible to switch off.
Yeah. And when you're working for a brand and you hate it and you see it all the time, it's just like, ugh.
Yeah, exactly. And it started to kind of bleed into my personal life as well, because I would get home and think, okay, well, the last thing I want to do is go on the internet and talk about makeup, because yes, I've been doing that all day and it's made me very miserable. So, you know, it just, social media in and of itself is, you know, stressful, and it kind of infiltrates your mind at all times because you can't really get away from it. So I ended up quitting my job, and I just thought, right, I'll apply for other jobs. And in the meantime, I'll focus on my blog and, you know, see what happens with me doing that. I tried to be a full-time blogger for a while. I don't know whether it was that my blog is quite niche, so it's quite hard to find a mixture of brands who want to work with someone with a skin condition, which
that's
probably shouldn't shock me as much. But even the brands that, you know, they target sensitive skin and things like that, I would get some brands that would come to me and ask me to do a video for them using the products, and I would say, you know, I assume you know this, but I have rosacea, so if I'm using the products, my face is going to be quite red. It's going to look like, sure, I'm becoming red from the product. Is that going to be a problem? And they would, you know, instantly they would be kind of like, oh yeah, maybe not. And then, you know, there are a lot of brands that come to you and say, we're launching this product and we need you to talk about it in 2 days. And I would say, oh, I need at least a month to try out the product before I can talk about it. And they'd be like, oh, well, you know, it's a paid collaboration. Does that make a difference? It's like, no.
No, I still need to try it to
review
it.
No, I still need a month. So I just think I would feel absolutely mortified if somebody, you know, if somebody comes to me and says, I tried that product that you really like and it didn't work for me. I feel absolutely mortified, even though I know for a fact that I've used it for 10 years and I think it's wonderful. But I feel guilty that that person hasn't had the same experience. So I can't even imagine how I would feel if I told people, this product has changed my life, and I'd never tried it. And then people came back to me and said, it made my face fall off. Like, how, I don't know how people could live with themselves, yeah, when they do things like that. But,
well, you're different, because I think a lot of people do that. They just don't
yeah,
care. Am I right that that's where, yeah, kind of Pinterest came in, and your consultancy kind of helped balance that?
Yeah, definitely. It was that decision of, okay, I either have to find a way to make the blogging work full time, which would either mean that I had to relax my kind of rules that I'd set for myself, which was I only talk about things that I absolutely love and would stand by forever,
mm-hmm,
or I would find other ways of kind of monetizing the work that I do. And, you know, it's really hard. I do think a lot of people still don't really understand what goes into running a blog, how much it costs. And I think they don't realize how much time goes into it.
It's so much time.
Especially because, you know, I'll put something up on Instagram, for example, and if it's something to do with rosacea, it will usually kind of drive a lot of questions. If it goes beyond my little bubble of people who follow me, so if it goes on the Explore page on Instagram, or, you know, if somebody shares it in their stories and it reaches a wider audience, that might mean that I get new followers, but it also means that a lot of people tend to come straight to my DMs, or, you know, they don't necessarily tend to go and check the blog before they ask a question.
Where you have a ton of information that they can help themselves to and search for.
Yeah.
They go straight to the source and ask, I'm sure, the same questions over and over again, which individually, good intentioned, just didn't think to look at the website. But when you on the receiving end of all of it, that's really tough.
Yeah. And it's hard as well because it's such an emotive conversation.
Yes.
And I have been where they are. And if I had discovered a person on the internet who looked like me, who talked like me, who was obviously a real human being, who was talking so openly about rosacea, I think my first response would just be to DM them going, oh my God, I love you. Oh my God, I have so many questions. Let me tell you all my questions. Tell me everything. I know why people do it and I empathize so much, which is why I struggle so much with trying to set boundaries with it, because I feel incredibly guilty that I can't get back to every single person that messages me. I feel really guilty that I now basically have a standard response that I send people, which is, please read this blog post, which is like the FAQ motherload of every bit of content I've ever written on rosacea is linked under lots of like helpful headlines. I feel guilty that it's such an impersonal response from me, because, you know, I know that people are coming to me and they want someone to talk to, and they want someone that understands. That's why they've not gone to their doctor. That's why they've come to me instead.
I wish that I could alleviate that guilt for you, because just hearing you talk about it, you are giving them a personal response, because what you're doing is that over the years you have poured yourself into all of these articles and all of these resources. So I would just like to say that stop feeling guilty for that. I fixed it. But
thank you.
I think that you definitely are helping people and giving them such a personal response, because your blog is all personal, you know?
Mm.
That's really tough.
Yeah, it is. And it's, you know, it's something that I constantly have to balance as well, because, you know, I'll often take time off social media. You know, I don't tend to do a big kind of like, goodbye, friends, I am leaving for 2 weeks.
Those are my favorite.
Because I don't think that, as a general, unless you're one of those people where people are literally like, they haven't posted to stories in 6 hours, they must be dead. I don't think people actually care all that much. But I do try to take time off. Just, I've now realized that if I don't have something that I desperately want to say or need to say, I don't have to say anything. And I think that's the problem when I was trying to do blogging full time, is that there's so much pressure to be creating and, you know, doing content every day. And I think, you know, April is Rosacea Awareness Month.
Yes.
And so that is like the month I start prepping for that. Kind of just after Christmas, I start talking to brands and sort of saying, you know, what can we work on that is going to be useful? It's not just, you know, let's make some money. It's what are you bringing to me and my audience that can really help and it's actually going to serve people? And so it takes a lot of time to prepare for that. And I try to post every single day in April. And it's not just posting every day. It's I'm sharing a lot of my vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard enough to kind of expose yourself and say, you know, this is what I want to say and these are the things I'm feeling, and then have literally hundreds of people also unload their vulnerabilities and sadness and, you know, all that stuff onto you. And, you know, I would love to be able to go back to everybody and say, you know, thank you for sharing that with me, or have you tried this, or do you know what, just listening, just saying like, I hear you, I've heard your pain and I'm sorry about that. But it takes so much out of me to do the first bit and then to have to do the second bit, and then also making people understand that this is still not my job. Like, I'm actually doing this in my evenings and weekends on top of all the other things that I do to make money. And so it becomes this hard balance to find a way of supporting these people, of doing the work that I want to do and making the changes that I want to do while also staying sane.
Yeah, I mean, that whole kind of conundrum is why I wanted to talk to you, because you are a sensitive soul and you are constantly just exposing yourself for the good of other people and then feel guilty that you're not doing enough or helping enough. And I can see that there's ways in which you might feel that you've boxed yourself in talking about certain things, but then also feel like a stark responsibility to keep talking about those things because it's useful and helpful and you're kind of doing a service for other people. But then what is the thing that kind of helps you kind of break out of that a bit? And I guess talking more about skin positivity and visible differences is a combination of those things. And I would love to ask you about the Real Skin Club, because I feel like that might be the thing that kind of combines all of the other elements of your work and is maybe kind of giving you a way both out and in at the same time of what you want to be doing. Tell me about Real Skin Club.
Oh, I'm so excited that I can finally talk about it. So Real Skin Club actually came about because after the madness of April, after the madness of Rosacea Awareness Month, I said to my husband, I was like, right, in May, I'm not doing anything. I'm not going to post on social media.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to write. I'm not even going to draft blog posts. I'm not going to do anything. I'm literally going to sit and not think about my face, not think about rosacea and not talk about it and just be. And then I think within about a week of sitting and just giving myself time to think, the idea just came into my head. And I you know, I'd been trying to think for such a long time. How can I find a way to make money so I can keep doing this stuff that I think is very important and the stuff that I really enjoy doing? You know, when I give myself time to actually think about what I want to share and what I think is important and what I would have wanted to hear at 21 when I was first diagnosed, I'm really proud of the work that I create. I look back at my blog and I feel incredibly proud of the stuff that I've put out over the past, you know, 7-8 years. So I think that, you know, for a while I've been trying to think, you know, how do I keep this going? Like, how can I continue to make this content for free when I can't actually make enough money for a full-time job from it?
Yes.
And so I'd been trying to think for ages and ages and ages. And then, you know, I'd been in a way trying to get away from just being a rosacea blogger. You know, I'm so interested in so many different parts of, you know, the way the media portrays visible differences. And, you know, within the skin positivity community, I'd met so many incredible people who, on hearing their stories, echoed mine so closely. It doesn't matter if they had, you know, vitiligo or acne or psoriasis or, you know, any kind of condition where people don't understand it. People will kind of try and other you because of it. Mm. And it impacts your mental health and kind of your day-to-day life. I think so many of them have similar threads running through them. And so I started an interview series on my blog called How Do I Look, where I wanted to use my platform for something other than just myself.
Yes.
And I wanted to give a voice to people who were trying to do the same thing as I did with rosacea, but for their various different skin conditions or visible differences. And so I wanted to be able to use the platform that I had built to share their voices, share their stories, and hopefully get their voices out there to people who need to hear them. And over time, you know, hearing those stories, hearing their positivity and hearing the way that they conduct themselves, I just thought, I think there's something here. And similarly to the way that, you know, like the body positivity community has, you know, it's really become such a lovely, comforting place to so many people, where there are people sharing artwork and, you know, poems and quotes and things that just bring so much joy and comfort to people within that community. And I thought, why can't we do the same thing for skin positivity? I was seeing so many brands who were already kind of, their ears were kind of pricking up at the new thing that they could potentially kind of grab onto and join in.
You see it in adverts every once in a while now, where you're like, I see you.
There's a girl with like one spot on her cheek and they're like, oh my god, revolutionary, look how diverse we are.
Yeah, and hit with body hair as well, they're like, this girl doesn't shave her armpits, about, it's like 2 weeks of growth and you're like, okay.
So, you know, I could already see brands kind of popping up and, you know, more people were kind of getting interested in skin positivity. And I just thought, right, okay, basically, how can this be utilizing the platform that I've already built and the kind of the name that I have linked to skin positivity? And how can that, you know, jump off the back of that? And how can also that help in a circle, my content stay kind of viable? Like, how could this all work together as one? So yeah, we've only just launched with, I came up with the idea in May, and then basically over the entirety of lockdown, I was just thinking, how can I do this? How can I make this work? What can I bring to the table? And how can this be something that's actually really useful? So the main thing that I'm proudest of is the affirmation cards that we, well, I keep saying we, Real Skin Club is we. but basically they were affirmations that I have found personally useful. Things like, my skin does not define me. I like who I see in the mirror, things like that. So things that are helping me build confidence, build my self-esteem, build towards skin positivity, and things that other people can use. So they're the kind of, that's our kind of hero product at the moment. Mm-hmm. And then I'm in talks with some amazing artists. So the idea is that I work with artists who are also within the skin positivity community. Wow. So it's all content that is coming from a real place of skin positivity, that it's not just, you know, a brand saying, oh yeah, skin positivity is trending on Pinterest, how about we start doing a range of like skin positivity prints or something. And it's like, I wanted it to actually come from artists who feel it deeply, who they, that's their experience, that's how they feel, that's how they want to support their community.
And these are prints that people can buy.
Yeah, so we've got a print up at the moment. We've just launched pin badges, and we've got the affirmation cards up at the moment. And then we've got lots of new exciting things coming in the new year. The tagline is the Skin Positivity Gift Shop. So it's basically going to be all sorts of things that will either help or will kind of bring positivity and bring that kind of happiness and joy that's all linked around appearance.
Yeah, and a sense of identity, like a positive part of your identity. I think that's really, really lovely what you're doing for that. Do you feel like this sort of skin positivity, that sort of space, that gives you more kind of business potential, but also kind of creative potential, and that it doesn't necessarily have to maybe be about you and your own skin that you constantly have to expose?
Yeah, that was a big thing when I was kind of sitting down and really planning what I wanted Real Skin Club to be. And I didn't want it to be about me. I didn't want my face to be on anything. I didn't want it to be, you know, Real Skin Club in association with Talented Lex or anything like that. I didn't want it to be about me. I wanted it to be something separate. I think I was very clear from the beginning that I saw it as something, again, that I kind of felt a responsibility, that it's how can this be done in a way that's very respectful to the skin positivity community? How can it be done by somebody who understands, who knows, who's been listening, who's been sharing, who's been, you know, immersed in this world for years?
Yes.
And I wanted to make sure that, you know, it was always very, you know, just always with it in mind, like what is going to be useful. So things like the affirmation cards would come into that side of it, where it's like, okay, this is a daily practice that you can do, that you can be working on yourself.
Yes. And you include information on the science behind affirmations and the impact that they have. Yes.
Yeah. And like how I've written a blog post where there's all kinds of tips on how you can use them, and there's like a full section on how they work and why they work and all that kind of stuff. So it's all very much kind of science-based.
Yes.
And then on the other side is the stuff that's there to, you know, comfort and build that sense of community, and, you know, just changing something from the thing that I hated about myself, the thing that I never wanted anybody to know, the thing that I hid for so many years, and now it's become a thing that actually it means a lot to me, and the community means a lot to me. And, you know, the thought of somebody putting a print up on their wall that's got, you know, my friend James, who I've been friends with since university, he's an illustrator, and he did the amazing Real Skin Club print that we've got on the site at the moment. And I cried so hard when he sent over the picture, because all the little people on this image just look so happy and so comfortable, and they're all just perfectly imperfect, as we like to say. But it makes me feel really proud that it's something that can stand apart from me. That it is something that, you know, if maybe in the future, if I do want to stop Talented Lex, that sounds very dramatic. But, you know, if I did want to retire from my blog or whatever, which you're allowed to do. I see this. Exactly. I see a lot of this actually going on at the moment with accounts who started, especially kind of acne accounts, because they tend to be the huge, huge, huge ones with the big followings. And I see a lot of people there saying, I've been sharing my skin in detail and that's all I've been talking about for 6 years. And I kind of don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to wake up and only think about my skin and only worry about where my next bit of content's coming from. And, you know, for some of them, it's that their skin has got slightly better, or that, you know, they have learned to live with it, or that it's not a bigger deal as it used to be. And they kind of feel like either they're not getting the same response, you know, if they're posting a picture and they're acne isn't as bad as it was 6 years ago, they get less engagement, they get less comments, they get less people are not following them anymore because they don't have acne anymore. And it's just, you know, all this stuff, it's, things change so quickly, and I don't know where I'll be in a couple of years. I would like to think that my, you know, the content that I have been writing will still be relevant and still be useful to people who have just been diagnosed, but how much I will still want to be involved in that kind of day-to-day talking about rosacea, I don't know. And so I really like that there's now something that I can focus on that I feel is bringing real happiness and use to the community without me having to be there kind of front and center doing jazz hands.
Is although we do love it when you do jazz hands. Are there things outside of the world of beauty and skin that you might want to venture into?
I don't know, actually. I don't see, this is the thing. I don't know if I've ever had enough time to sit and think about that to know. It's so ironic as well, because I had so many big plans this year. and obviously everything has just gone by the wayside. But yeah, I had some really, really big plans for potentially trying to gather a lot of people with rosacea in one place for like a central kind of happening. That was going to be our big thing this year. And again, that's something that I was so excited for, because it wasn't about me again. It wasn't, you know, a couple of people I was talking to when we were trying to get it all sorted, they were saying, okay, so obviously you're going to get up and do like a talk and everything. I was just like, probably not. No, because it's meant to be that I'm bringing other people together. It's meant to be that it's not showing people that it's not just me they can go and talk to, that there are all these other people as well that also have the same experiences. And, you know, trying to build more of a community and more of a, you know, a tangible kind of impact of everything that I've been working towards. Because that's the thing that makes me so happy when I post something on the internet, and then underneath there'll be someone will ask me a question, but I might not go back to them for a little while if it's a really busy comment section, and then someone else will comment and reply to them and say, oh yeah, I tried that, and this, or have you tried this, or have you ever thought it might be this? And it sounds so cheesy, but it really does make me feel all warm and fuzzy. It's just like these people are building their own community underneath my posts. Yeah. And it has evolved beyond people just looking to me and being like, no, I asked her, I want her advice on this. It's become, my page is basically just like a hub. Yes. And people come there to talk about rosacea, and it doesn't necessarily matter if I'm not there or not, you know, on it replying to every single person, because I can't, because there's just far too many. No. And I need to sleep. But
that's wonderful.
It is lovely that it's kind of evolved past that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're married to Erin Gillies, who people will better know as technically Ron. I think across every social platform, he has that handle.
Yeah.
But he's a comedy writer and author. And what I find so fascinating is that usually when there's like a married couple who are both big on social media, like they're one brand, like we have children and I'm the dad and she's the mum, and we, do you know what I mean? Like it's like a whole thing.
Yeah. But it becomes like a here's the Gillies.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of thing.
Which also I would be like super interested in, but having two individual people who talk about different subjects and are kind of known for different things in one household, I feel like is quite unique. What is that like? And what is, I mean, social media must feature so heavily in your household. And I mean, Erin talks a lot about mental health, and you talk a lot about, you know, skin positivity. So you have like these two very serious things that you both kind of campaign and are ambassadors for, in a sense. So how does that work? What is that like?
In a way, it's really good, because we both completely understand. So, you know, he understands that if I post a picture on Instagram at 7 o'clock, I will need to sit for the next 3 hours responding to people. Yes. And he understands that that is such an important part of what I do. I can't just post something and then be like, okay, bye.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, I've posted something potentially asking a question or like something that's quite evocative, something that a lot of people have things to say. And it would be really rude for me to just be like, no, I'm not going to reply to anybody. So I try as much as I can to reply to people. I will try and do a cutoff. So, you know, I'll reply that evening. If it's been a really, really popular post, I'll try and do a chunk in the morning as well, replying mm-hmm. to people. But, you know, if someone sends a comment on a picture that's like 2 weeks old, I just have to let it go.
Yeah.
I can't do it. It will take too much time. So it's great that he understands how social media works so that yes. he can understand and give me a bit of slack when I'm like, oh, I haven't posted anything in like 2 weeks and I probably should post something. Or I'll say to him, okay, which do you think this photo is better or this photo is better? And yeah. he'll be like, well, I think that one would probably be better on Facebook and that one probably better on... So it's like, it's really useful in that way as well. But then at the same time, I feel like we give each other an out too often. So sure. on our honeymoon, we actually specifically said, we will have half an hour of like internet use in the morning. And then for the rest of the day, our phones are essentially just cameras. Like we're not doing crazy yes. social media all day on our honeymoon. And Aaron really struggled with that so much more. I was quite proud. I was like, after a couple of days, I didn't even use my full half an hour. I was just like, quickly post some pictures to Instagram, quickly like reply to people on Twitter, and then I'm done. And Aaron was there like up until the last second being like, wait. So many jokes. And so it can be hard because... obviously, like we were saying earlier, social media doesn't really stop.
No.
So, you know, we'll be sat on a weekend and one of us will be looking at our phones and it's just like, oh God, you've got work to do, haven't you? And he'll be like, yeah, just half an hour. So in a way, I do wonder if I would find it easier to switch off if I was married to someone who just had a normal job and was kind of like a bit more... kind of like my parents and my sisters, where they're just kind of like, what are you doing? Why are you still looking at your phone?
They're civilians.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Like I say to my parents, right, just don't talk to me for half an hour. I've just got to post this thing on Instagram. And then they'll give me the half an hour and then they'll be like, what are you doing still on your phone? Can you put down your phone, please? I'm like, oh, you don't understand.
Yeah.
You don't understand.
Mom, you don't know.
So, yeah, I do think it's kind of like half a dozen of one and what's the phrase? Six of one, half a dozen of the other. But we met on Twitter, so it's social media has kind of been there
yeah.
throughout our whole relationship. And, you know, there were people watching our relationship develop on Twitter, like people who knew us. And, you know, we had like the hashtag for our wedding. And when we sat together the next morning and opened all our cards and things, we also went through the hashtag and were looking at all the lovely tweets that people sent us. And, you know, it's... social media was an enormous part of how we got together. And because you mentioned like we're quite separate on mm-hmm. social media, and he, because of some of the stuff he shares, he gets his share of yeah. trolls and yeah. targeting from people on Twitter. And so he very clearly early on was like, I'm not going to retweet that thing of yours because I don't really want them to be coming after you
to that. Yeah.
Yeah, so he made a very clear choice early on that that wasn't something that he was prepared to do. He didn't want me to be kind of targeted by them as well. And also got some comments from bloggers back in the day where, you know, they kind of implied that maybe my content was doing better than it should because I had a husband who was big on social media already. And it's like, yeah, because so many people who follow Aaron for his political tweets love to hear about Nail Varnish.
They're the same. As you said, we're multifaceted beings.
Oh, totally. I still find it funny. There are still people now. Somebody sent a message the other day saying that they'd seen a photo of our dog, our new dog. And they were like, I only just realized because I saw the same dog on two different people that I follow's feed that you two are married.
Oh,
I was
like, God, how do people still not know this?
Yeah, mind so we still blown. Get people every so often. Yeah, that like follow us independently and then it completely like freaks them out to find out that we're so married. Because yeah, we don't tend to put a lot of stuff up about each other, to be honest. But yeah. it's not like we have kind of a pact of like,
no,
let's not be on each other's social. It just kind of happens that way, I think.
No, I mean, it feels very natural.
Yeah.
So my final question for you, Lex. what has really kind of struck me throughout this conversation has been your, I feel like you have a real sense of duty when you decide that you care about something or someone or a subject. You really kind of dedicate yourself to that. Just bringing it back to the title of this podcast, what do you feel is ultimately at the heart of what it is that you do?
I think that the thing that keeps me doing what I do and still feeling so passionate about it is just the idea of being useful, just that idea of being able to give people the support that I didn't have for such a long time. And I still remember so clearly how it felt to leave that first doctor's appointment and be told at 21 that I had an incurable skin condition and potentially I might, you know, look the same way forever, and not really knowing what to do with that information and not having anybody to talk to. And that girl is constantly stood at my shoulder every time I post anything on the internet, every time I talk to anybody, every time I approach a brand, every time I write a blog post, every time I, you know, think about what I want to do with Real Skin Club. That girl is kind of there being like, yep, 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 or no, you're steering off course there. Like she's the one that guides me. And I think that I try and keep that in mind at all times. That's what steers me right, is thinking, it sounds really cheesy and it's been said so many times before, but it's remember why you started. Mm. And no matter how long I've been doing this, or no matter, you know, how far away I am now from where I thought I was when I started my blog, when I thought I'm just going to be a beauty blogger, that's what I'll do. That is still the core message, that thing of, right, why did you write this? Who is this helping? Is this still going to be useful in a year? Could someone pick this up in 5 years and still think, okay, yeah, I've either learned something or I felt seen or I felt heard in this content. And that's the thing that makes me want to keep coming back and doing it, even when it's hard and even when it's heartbreaking. And that's the thing that I hope people see in my content.
Oh, you're brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on and for talking with us. Quick reminder, where can everyone follow you?
So I'm on everything as Talon Tidlex. That's Talon as in like talons, nail talons. Puns don't work when said out loud. And Real Skin Club is at realskinclub.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Lex.
Thank you for having me.
A huge thank you to Lex for talking with me so honestly about so many different aspects of her life and her work. And I officially absolve her of any guilt when it comes to not responding to all of her DMs. I think one of the most interesting parts of Lex's situation is the complex nature of feeling like you have a duty to the public or to a community around a sensitive subject like having a visible difference, and having to balance your own mental health and energy around that. I'd love to hear any thoughts you have on this if you have experience trying to balance this for yourself. Give us a shout at Heart of It Podcast on Instagram. Thank you again for listening to today's episode. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you might get your podcasts from. And you can follow us on social media as @HeartOfItPodcast.